pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Yeah, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two underway now. 6 minutes after the hour. Still, come on the program today. We'll hear from Alabama political reporters Josh Moon will join us. And then in the 11 o'clock hour from Yellowhammer News, Editor-in-Chief Sean Ross get up caught up on some state politics, president's Senate race, a lot of things going on. So if you would, make sure you stay tuned for that. Join us now. He is the chairman of the State Senate Finance Taxation Education Committee. Hails from Miles Stomping Ground, Decatur, up North Alabama. State Senator Arthur Orr joins us on the line. Senator Orr, how are you this morning?
Certainly wish you all the best down in the Mobile area.
Hey, it certainly is certainly a very kind thing to say. First off, before we go into any state matters, how's COVID-19? How are things going in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's kind of quieted down a good bit. The schools in Madison County, and that's where Huntsville's based, you know, were virtual only to start the school year, but other systems surrounding them have a hybrid where you can be virtual or you can go to school. But slowly but surely, things are starting to get back to normal, I hope.
Yeah, I think things are at least trending in that direction as far as I can tell, but it's a slog either way.
That's true. But I think every Alabamian could certainly agree that they're ready to be done with the virus.
No question about
totally
it.
In our control.
Wearing these masks and the social distancing, maybe it's a new way of life, but I'm not looking to get too used to it. Senator, what did I get you on here? And my interpretation of the state's in the liquor business, and it seems like you've always been a guy, you've spoken out on this year after year after year, get the state out of the liquor business, and it would be in the state's financial interest overall to do so. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, overall. I guess a lot of it comes from Jeff just being a free market person. And, you know, I think if we were designing state government today, we wouldn't sit down and go, hey, let's get into the liquor business and let's compete with the private sector out there so we can make some money too. I think, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, you know, if you see where the marijuana debate is headed, would the state of Alabama 10 or 15 years from now choose to compete head-to-head against private retailers out there, or we get into the distribution business of legalized marijuana, assuming it comes to that, is that something we would choose to do? And that's not a function of government, I don't believe. So that's, you know, where I start as far as the fundamental premise. Government shouldn't be out there competing against the private sector in the business world.
But if you take it that next step and you look at it, private sector does so many things better than government. Even if we just say, okay, well, the government's here, if Alabama were to decouple itself from the liquor business, and could it reap the same kind of benefits or the same kind of rewards? If not, because what I started on this tangent yesterday, and it was my contention that state is losing money by being in the liquor business, or it's not. I was inartful in my phrasing. It should have been. It's not making as much money as it could on liquor going to the general fund or wherever it goes.
Yeah, well, so let's think about this, you know, kind of take a step backwards. So if you are the government operating state liquor stores, and Jeff, I've had emails from around the state from current and past ABC employees, and I recall one of them, actually, I believe it was from down in your new neck of the woods, where I had a former employee say, well, Senator, you wouldn't believe the number of broken bottles that walked out of the back of the store on a Friday night to the trunks of the employees. and I don't want to slander the employees, but what the gentleman was saying basically was that there's no owner-operator mentality. It was just, you know, chalk these bottles up as broken, but, you know, help ourselves to a couple bottles a week on Friday evening. And so I had a fiscal note done to get us out of the retail-only sales, and the numbers that came back were anywhere between $7 and $12-14 million that the taxpayers would see saved by getting out of these very lucrative leases that a lot of the landlords around the state, usually they're very politically connected people, have in the various retail locations. And you would also see savings, of course, the employees and that we've hired to run the cash registers. You're talking about 600 some odd people. You know, all that gets offloaded to the private sector again. And I'll agree with your assumption that the private sector can do things better, faster, cheaper than the government can.
Well, it's also this, the people that work at these liquor stores, they're state employees. And I would assume they get the same state benefits, the same treatment as, you know, somebody that works at the Department of Revenue or wherever that might be. They get vested in a system which has a legacy cost. It's very expensive, much more expensive than what a typical liquor store employee would get, you know, in the private sector. And that adds up after a while as well.
That's correct. The I recall several years ago figuring up what the cost of the average retail employee was, and we were up close to $40,000 a year, and that includes the retirement, that includes the health care benefit that they get, and of course their just salary compensation as a cash register or stocker of the shelves. But so they're not, you know, I would say on a cash basis or salary basis, not, quote, overpaid. But when you throw in the benefits, that's what makes, that's what tilts the scale again back to the private sector as being a lower cost option to again, run these retail establishments.
But could you privatize it? Would the state take a big hit? So when I bring this up, people are like, well, they're never going to do that because the amount of money that goes to the state out of these liquor stores is so great that is an obstacle. That's a hurdle.
Well, you know, we've had testimony in past years that say that's a fallacy, but you do have to make the assumption that, one, people will continue to drink at the same level that they drink today. And that's not going to decline. And then you do have stores that lose money chronically in ABC, but nonetheless, they see it as their one of their missions to have stores, even if they chronically lose money around the state. And so, as a taxpayer, you got to think, okay, is it a fundamental mission of state government to make sure that it provides liquor in more rural areas of the state just so the citizens there have better access to available liquor? Is that really a fundamental function of state government? So anyway, the other argument, you know, about the making of money is most every dollar of the ABC is earmarked. In that, so a dollar comes in and it gets busted up between DHR and mental health and various state organizations. So they say, oh, if you cut us, that money's going to go away. And poor DHR, and of course they need funding, will lose X millions of dollars. Well, I mean, again, assuming people drink the same and the sales are the same and the markup's the same and the tax structure is the same, you know, again, based on our numbers, the state doesn't take a hit. So all that to say, it's close to a wash. But with the efficiencies, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the Legislative Fiscal Office calculates that $7 to $12 to $14 million savings that comes from the salaries, the leases, et cetera.
Let's get back to the lease question. I've always maintained that's what's keeping the state, and I think you alluded to it, is what's really that is the determining factor here. It's the politically connected that are, like you called them, landlords, and they're paying a lease to the to these landlords. The state is, and they have been politically corrected. If it weren't for those leases, might the state of Alabama have gotten out of this, disentangled from this, a long time ago?
Well, that is. You know, it requires me to have a crystal ball, but they're the ones that hire the lobbyists every year to walk the halls and work legislators to be against any privatization effort. So that's where the money comes from. And then the phone calls and the upset individuals comes from the State Employees Association. And then, you know, surprisingly, you know, and I count myself as a friend, you have ALCAP, who says it's going to cause increased drinking by underage individuals. And every study I've seen says that's not true for the states that have gone fully privatized. You don't have the underage drinking vastly increasing from where it was. And particularly in our situation, Jeff, I would argue, since we do have about 600 private retailers out there today, that genie's already out of the bottle. A lot of states have been, when they convert, they have no private retail establishments. They're solely state-operated retail establishments, and then they get out. And so perhaps, you know, there you could see a small increase, but the studies don't show any substantial increase in underage drinking.
I mean, that's a stated purpose, right? Why is this, if you go and ask, why is the state still doing this? They would tell you, well, it's to curb the societal impacts of alcohol, and we need to be that stopgap in between to let this get too out of control. But in reality, it's all these other things kind of going on as well.
I think it's an anachronistic entity here in the 21st century. It's a vestige of prohibition and those days, and you know, again, I think its time has come and gone. And do we need regulations and laws and enforcement? Sure we do. But, you know, as far as some of the silly rules that you see enforced against restaurants and things like that, it's just, I think it's something that's run its course, and it's time to move into the 21st century.
Which led me to my next point, and I assume you've had a chance to look at Governor Ivey's plan to lease these prisons. If you're not really happy with the leasing situation with the ABC stores, why should we put our faith in the state to lease prisons as well? Even though it's a totally different thing, it's still the same kind of concept.
Well, yes, it's totally different when you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar proposal. So I'm going to leave that question to the governor. I've not seen any leases, documents, or contracts, so I have no idea what they say or don't say. I do know on the leases for the ABC locations, as I said earlier, many times you find politically connected individuals, large donors, people like that, who miraculously are getting these leases, you know, where they and the payments on a per square foot basis, many times, as I've looked at them, can be quite lucrative.
Right. The state getting into leasing business and not just outright owning it, if that's the track record, then my question is like, well, you know, and why would we put faith in the idea of leasing prisons? But that's a discussion for another time. Senator, we're out of time here, but I want to thank you for making time for us down here in Mobile this morning.
Jeff, always a pleasure, and appreciate it, and appreciate what you do in getting the what I'm going to call the truth out there, and letting people certainly hear the other side of the argument.
Absolutely. We'll do it again real soon. Thanks for joining us this morning. That was State Senator Arthur Orr of Decatur. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.